play some cards. You lost my money, you lost my car. Had to put your way back to LA. You only made it halfway. I should feel sorry, but I really don't. You think I'll come get you, but this time
from sea to shining sea throughout the solar system and extending to interstellar regions beyond. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on the Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, the Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous planet, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. You know, there are millions and millions of other things you could be doing, but you chose to be here. And I want you to know I appreciate that. I'm here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. Because you matter, we publish the K-Files, our free newspaper. Newsletter. We email it out. And we just emailed the last edition out. In fact, just before showtime, the last batch of them started going out. We start that on Friday nights, late Friday night, and it's timed. It goes out in batches. And I guess we're going to have to begin doing that on Thursday to get them out sooner. The list is getting longer. It's taking longer to get them out, but it's absolutely free. And if you're not getting it, you're really, really not getting it. And you can fix that. Only you can fix it. Just go over to my website. My website is kevinsmithshow.com. And when you get over to the website, look right in the middle of your screen, and you'll see where it says K-Files. Click that and subscribe. You will get automatically an email, and that email has a link in it that you have to click to activate your subscription. That way we don't spam anybody, okay? And so take care of that during the show tonight. You'll get the next edition. The K-Files comes out every 2 weeks. The Kevin Smith Show is 100% listener-supported. Keep that in mind. We don't have big corporations buying advertising here. We don't have anybody. We don't sell advertising. And so it's listener supported. We've been listener supported for years. And we need your support. You know, we have millions of folks listening to the show, but just a handful of folks that are willing to step forward and kick a buck in here and there. And some people kick in, you know, they donate $50, $60, $100, $500 from time to time. But if everybody were to donate each month a dollar or two, we'd be well. Everything would be fine. If everyone listening to the show right now supports the show at the same level you do, will we be here tomorrow? There's a donate button over on my website. If you got an extra dollar or two or five or ten or whatever, help us out. We need it. Next week, I'll have to say this real fast. The plan is that I will be in Nashville starting next week, Nashville, Tennessee. I'll be there for 2 weeks, and I will be broadcasting from there. Okay? Now, we're going to be returning to the thrilling days of yesteryear when I broadcast from a laptop. So it may be a little bit interesting, but we're going to get it done, and we're going to have a good time. And hopefully I can show you some of the sights of Nashville and share with you some of the interesting people that I meet while I'm there. But the plan is, and it could change, but the plan is that I'll be in Nashville starting next week. That if it changes, that means I'll be here. But either way, Nashville or where I am right now, I'll be here on the air. We'll be back right after this with our guest this evening, John Ventry. All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. Musicalley.com.
She said she'd see me, but ain't that the way a broken heart should be? Yeah, a broken heart should be.
Right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said just before the break, my plans will be to leave either Friday night or Saturday and head on over to Nashville, Tennessee. And I'll be there for a couple of weeks if everything goes as planned. If it doesn't go as planned, I'll be right here doing what we do every night. And if it goes as planned, I'll be right there doing what we do every night. How about that? And so I'll be doing the show from there. Some of you have been around long enough to remember when I used to do the show from a laptop because I was traveling the world. And so the show originated from wherever my feet happened to be at the time. It's fine. We may not be able to do as fancy a job with video as we do from the studio here, but we're going to try. And either way, we're going to have some great shows and some great guests, just like our guest tonight. Our guest tonight has been with us many times before. His name is John Ventry. You know him as a longtime UFO investigator. And we're delighted to have him back with us this evening. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Kevin.
John, how many years have you been investigating UFOs?
You know, I think it's about 15 or 16. I think actually 16 that I've been with MUFON.
Now you investigate not just MUFON cases, but you investigate some stuff on your own too, right?
No, the UFOs, it's all through MUFON. As a matter of fact, I tell people that I want their cases to be put in through MUFON because I don't want anybody saying that the better cases are done outside of the system, you know, because you get some strange people say, well, you know, if you get a good case, it's not in the system, you pull it out. Now, every case has to be in the system, and as a matter of fact, I need to know where I'm sending my investigators because I don't want to send somebody somewhere and then there's no record of it, you know. Yeah. So at least if they put it in the or MUFON.com, I know where I sent the person in case they don't come back.
Well, they all come back, right?
So far.
How many years have you been investigating?
Yeah, I think it's 16 now. I've been the state director here in Pennsylvania, probably 7 or 8 of those years, probably about half of it. And, you know, I always seem to pick up other states. I've got Delaware, and then I also have Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Maine, which obviously I don't go up there. It's too far away, but I just kind of coordinate the cases and make sure they're being worked and completed.
So how did you get in? I know your background is pretty much in security and corporate security, that sort of thing. How did you get into UFO investigation?
Well, you know, it was interesting. Back in, when was it, 95 and 96, UPS put me on, that's where I worked for UPS, they put me on this assignment for almost 2 years traveling the whole country, and it was really boring. You know, I'm not a drinker, and, you know, at night, what are you going to do in your hotel room? So I got this. I was down in Florida. I was in Boynton Beach. I got this urge to write, and I wanted to. I was always a writer in high school. Good, you know, expository writing. I always wanted to write a book. So I said, you know what? I want to write a science fiction book. But you know, what can I base it on? And I was thinking about, you know, the year 2000, but it was already 96. You know, so I said, let me research this Mayan calendar that you know, I've heard of, the end of the world, that type of stuff. But a funny thing happened on the way to the Mayan calendar was as I started researching, you know, I ran into all these cultures that talked about star people, people from the star, people on flying shields, people on flying wings that they were visited, you know, the Mayans, the Hopi, the Dogon, you know, Alexander the Great, the Romans. I mean, they all had a story about people from the sky. So I said, you know what, I'm going to look into UFOs. So it was 97 to now, so that's 16 years. 97, I got involved in looking at UFOs. And then that's really, you know, most people in this field, when you ask them, they say, oh, I loved it since I was a kid. You know, Stan Gordon is a couple of miles away from me here in Pennsylvania, and he's been doing it since 10 years old. Well, I had no interest in UFOs. I was a Comic-Con horror magazine guy. I'd go to a Comic-Con horror thing, a zombie walk, you know, before I looked at UFOs. I did like sci-fi movies and that type of stuff, but I didn't get involved until I was almost 40, 39-ish when I started writing that book, and I said, there's something to this, I got to look into it. But, you know, Kevin, I think that my interest probably goes deeper than that. like a lot of people who don't know why they're doing this, but they seem to have this calling or urge to look into it.
Yeah.
Although there were so many people I've talked to that said, I have no interest in it, but yet all of a sudden I got this interest, you know? So I think it runs a little deeper than just the curiosity from researching a book, you know?
Okay, so let's talk about that deeper reason. What is that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had a bunch of things happen, and I've never discussed this on the air with anyone. I mean, I did put it in my books that I just recently wrote. I retired a year ago, in last April, and I wrote two books, UFOs Over Pennsylvania and another sci-fi book called Apophis 2029. Apophis is a real asteroid that's coming closer and closer to Earth. And in 2029, it just barely misses us. But again, I did a sci-fi story around that. But the UFOs Over the PA is a legitimate, real book on UFOs. But I what I did was I documented all of the strange things that have happened to me and my kids over the years. And so actually what I did was I printed that section out of my book. And I you know, for the first time, I really want to talk the paranormal. I've never done a paranormal show, never talked about the paranormal. I've always UFOs. But, you know, I printed those pages out because there's a lot here, and I want to really run through it and see what you think or your listeners think, because I think there's something else going on here. And I'm going to just start chronologically and run through it, and, you know, then we can talk about what do we think's going on here. But, you know, like I said, I printed it from my book. So, you know, really the first thing that ever happened was I was probably about 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, living in Brooklyn, New York. And, you know, it's a funny little story. You remember those little sand punching bags that would stand up when you knock them down?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I took a Frankenstein mask and I put it on one, and then I put it in my brother's bed, and I covered it with a sheet, and I kind of like hid in the room. I always played pranks. So he thought I was in his bed, so he went over, he pulled the sheets off, like, get out of my bed. This thing stood up and scared the crap out of him. You know, I was a prankster. You know, I would be the type of kid that would hide under the bed or in your closet and scare you. But so he told me he was going to get even with me, you know. But a funny thing happened, though, was one night I was just like laying in bed, and a pair of hands grabbed my feet. I mean, you know, I was just laying in bed. It grabbed my feet. There was nobody there. I screamed. I was like 5 years old at best, you know. And so my mother comes in, and then my father and brother walk in. That's everybody. My sister hadn't been born yet. There was nobody else in the room. I told them what happened. You know, my father, my mother looked under the bed, looked in the closet. I have no idea how that happened. But I know something grabbed my feet that day in my room. And it's funny, now as an adult, when I sleep, I will not hang an arm over the bed, you know, a foot over the bed, anything like that. I kind of stay in the bed more in a fetal position than anything else. But It was, you know, that's kind of like a stupid story, but it's really the start, because I don't know what grabbed my feet that time. But then, you know, I give it a lot of thought, and I used to play a game with my brother. Again, I was like maybe 4 years old, you know, and we used to play this game where we were able to pass through walls. And, you know, and I don't remember, because it was so long ago, if that was a dream or that was something we were really able to do. But I can remember it. It was like a dark vanilla wall. And the crazy thing was, there was a door there, but there was no handle on the door. And I remember my brother and I saying, well, let's go through this door. We were able to go through the walls. And I don't know if that was a dream, a game we were playing, but there were no pictures on the wall. But I have this vague, distant memory of being able to pass through walls as a little kid.
And how old would you have been at that time?
4 to 5, max.
Now, is your brother older than you, or is he younger?
No, he's 3 years older than I am.
Is he still living?
Yeah, yeah. And I need to ask him. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I need to ask him, Guy, do you remember, did we used to play a game where we were able to pass through walls? I know, I remember it. But it's something I really need to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was like maybe 1961, 1962. You know, I'm kind of guessing on the date because I was really small. And So then something strange happens in the summer of 1969. You know, the Mets are winning the World Series and all of that. Or, you know, they're winning the division, let's say, because it was summertime. You know, it was probably July of 69. So I have an out-of-body experience. And all my life, I thought that that was just the soul leaving your body. You know, that's what people said. You know, you go to bed at night, your soul, you know, can leave your body and float around and go places. And it was weird. It was about four nights in a row. I clearly remember it. I was about 12 years old. And I couldn't wait to go to bed for the sun to go down, 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know, go to bed, because I remember being outside. I'd pull my shoulders back, push my chest out, and thing, you know, like Superman, I was flying above the houses. I could see the top of the trees, my neighbors' houses. And the cool thing was that every night I got further. I could go further down the neighborhood. You know, I was in Richmond Hill, Queens living, and almost get to all the way to Liberty Avenue from where I lived. And I thought it was the coolest thing. But, it, you know, it was maybe four or five nights that that happened. And, it, you know, at that time it had not happened again. I also used to have this dream, two dreams. One was that I would die in the year 2039 at 82 years old. I don't know why I used to dream that 82 years old was be as long as I live. And, you know, I'm really healthy, to be honest with you. I play racquetball three mornings a week, play volleyball, work out. I'm hoping I live longer than 82, but that was one dream. But the other dream I used to have was I used to have this dream of I was in a doorway, leaning against the doorway, and it was a beige brick wall, and I'm looking out into a cemetery. So I get transferred here to Pennsylvania in 1997 with my job, UPS, and I'm looking for houses, and you know, I kind of go up in value because I'm not finding what I'm looking for. I go to this house that I'm in right now, and I go to the back door. She opens up the back door. I lean against the frame on the door. There's the beige brick wall. There's the cemetery in the distance. I ended up buying this house 16 years ago, and it was funny. I had the feeling I would never leave this house, at least never alive, or dead, you know, until I passed away. Twice at work, transfers came up for me to go to San Francisco back in 04 and New Jersey, I think it was in 06, and both times those transfers fell through, which was unbelievably unusual. UPS would transfer you every three, 4 years, 5 years. I spent 15 years here with UPS and didn't get transferred. And I told people, I know from that dream that I am never leaving this house.
So why? Why? What's the significance of the house?
I don't know. Well, it was in that dream. And when I came here and bought this house, when I opened the back door, there was the view I saw as a young kid of this beige brick wall and looking out into the cemetery. So, you know, some of these things are maybe not that significant, but things progress as to...
And you know, how old were you when you had that dream?
You know, those dreams, I think I was more like maybe 7 or 8 years old when I had those dreams. You know, I kind of remember being in the school because we'd cut those pictures out of Washington and Lincoln, you know, on that black paper. You know, their silhouette. So I might have been in first or second grade. I might be six years old, whatever it was. But I was small when I used to have those dreams. But it struck me when I saw this house and the view that I saw the future as a young kid. Mm-hmm. And that was the house I was meant to buy. And here I am 16 years later. So now things start to get what I'd say a little bit in the paranormal side. And, you know, this first thing that happens now in 1971, so I'm probably about 14 years old at the time. But my grandmother is in the hospital in Queens, and we're living on Long Island. And one night I'm in my room, you know, I'm just reading a book. The whole family went to visit her. I didn't go that time. And right outside my door, you know, my bedroom, I hear this loud moan. I mean, it was like... you know, like release of pain.
That had to be frightening.
It scared the crap out of me. I was a teenager. I thought somebody was in the house. I mean, it was right outside my door. You know, my grandmother, man, she was a tough chick. She was my great grandmother was from Russia. She was Russian Jew, and she married a British guy in London and had my grandmother there. And they divorced and came to the United States probably around the turn of the century. They no sooner get here, my great grandmother passes away. So my grandmother's living on the streets of New York like a little pauper, living in the alleys and in the train stations, and reminded me of the Gangs of New York, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You saw that movie with DiCaprio, you know, the little dirty kids living in the subways and stuff, you know? That was my grandmother, but she was tough. And but that night, she passed away. I heard that. My parents get home maybe 11:30 or so. I remember the phone ringing at, you know, maybe 4 in the morning or something, 3, 4 in the morning. And they said my grandmother had passed away. So I always said, you know, maybe that was her soul leaving her body before her, you know, her body actually physically passed away. But, you know, that was just strange. So really nothing happens until, you know, it was maybe 2 years later. I just had like this kind of lucid dream in 1973. So I'm probably about 16 years old. You know, I was playing, I think I played a doubleheader of baseball that day, and I was really tired. And I laid down in my room and I fell asleep, and I had this, and it was a lucid dream. I know it was a dream. And I'm in my backyard, and it had one of those kind of like cellar doors on an angle that you lift up and you go down about 10 flights, of, you know, 10 steps or whatever to mm-hmm. the basement. Well, in my dream, I open up the door and I go down the steps, but there's no basement there. There's a cave. So, you know, and I know this is a dream. So I go down into this cave and it kind of like wraps around, and I go down maybe like 3 levels. And, you know, I get down there maybe 3-4 levels. It's really dark. I can feel this presence. Something else was down there, you know? So I turn around and I decide to go back up, and, you know, I'm like running in slow motion. And this is a very typical description of, let's say, a dream, you know? So I'm kind of running in slow motion. I can't, but this thing, there's a voice I hear like in the distance there that says, come back down, don't go up, come back down. And I can see the light, and I'm going up. And
John, we have to step away for a break. Hold that thought, and let's pick up with that story right there. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this.
time to start a conversation. Just lit up in a fight. Went down to the waterfront. Black cat by my side. You know I tried to fool the blues now, baby, but I can't run, I can't hide.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, John Ventry. John, right in the middle of you relating that story to us, we had to go to break, so just pick up where you were, and let's go ahead.
Okay. Well, I said that I was down in this couple of layers down in this tunnel in this dream, and, you know, I'm trying to get back up, and there's something behind me, you know, like you could feel the hairs on your neck stand. I could feel this breathing on my shoulders, and I'm like trying so slow. I'm in slow motion, but I can't wake up either, you know? So I was scared to death. You know, part of me, curiosity, wanted to turn around and see what was there, but there was just something in me that said, don't turn around. If you turn around, you're never going to wake up from this. So I was able to move a finger, and I woke up. And Kevin, I remember sitting up in my bed, I was covered in sweat. My heart was pounding like I ran track back then. I felt like I just ran like 600 meters and absolutely covered in sweat. And I've always felt that was like one of those dreams that if I had turned around, I wasn't going to wake up. I would have died in my sleep, you know? And I really felt that whatever that was demonic. So that's my early childhood. So nothing happens now. You know, that was probably 1973. And nothing happens until 1990. I'm married with two kids, and I moved to Edmond, Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
And now things get weird. You know, I have a brand new house there. First time I finally made it in life. You know, I was 32 years old, bought a brand new house. I was the state security director for UPS for the state of Oklahoma. And, you know, so one night we had a first floor bedroom, and I'm walking to the bedroom to go to bed. You know, it's probably about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And in the hallway, I hear a loud moan, just like my grandmother when she passed away. But this was distinctly a male voice, and it sounded like a Native American. You know, it was like a chant more than a moan. I don't know what that was. I heard it in the stairway there. I go upstairs. I search the house because my two young kids are upstairs. They're probably 3 and 5. Nothing, you know? And a couple of days later, my wife and I were sitting on the couch watching America's Funniest Videos, right? And the kids are in bed. We hear 3 footsteps upstairs. Boom, boom, boom. So I didn't think anything of it. Then again, a little bit louder, boom, boom, boom. I turned to my wife, I said, you know, the kid's up, you know? And so we didn't get up, you know? All of a sudden, Kevin, I'm telling you, it was the 3 of the loudest footsteps. I couldn't have made a footstep that loud. Boom, boom, boom. I jump up, and because my boss in Dallas had just told me a story about how there was an intruder in his house when they came home one night. And the guy was hiding in the closet. He had just told me that story like a couple weeks earlier. I jump upstairs, I run up the stairs. My son's in his room sleeping, blanket pulled to his neck. He's 5 years old. My daughter's in the crib with the railings, 3 years old. I search the entire house, the toy box, the closets, nothing. I know what I heard. I mean, both my wife and I heard it. and I couldn't have made those footsteps, and it was on the floor, the ceiling, you know?
Uh-huh. Right above you.
Right above me. It wasn't like the wall or the roof or something. It was walking, whatever was right above me in the kid's room. So that's weird. That, you know, like I said.
What do you think that was?
I don't know what that was. It was footsteps. Three times, three footsteps. I can't explain it. It was a paranormal something made those sounds, you know? So, and another crazy thing happens around the same time. I become afraid of heights. You know, as a teenager, 18, 19, 20, I'm painting houses to make extra money, painting trim along the, you know, the peak of a house, 20, 25 feet up. Now, all of a sudden, in my late 20s, early 30s, I become afraid of heights. I'm absolutely afraid of heights around the same time. I don't know if there's any correlation or not, but 2 years later, we move, and we end up moving to New Jersey. UPS transfers me again. I'm the state security director for New Jersey for them. And strangest thing, everybody comes over to see the house. My parents, everybody's there. And the den, the garage, there's a door there into the garage. And I've been hearing these sounds the whole time, all week that we moved in. And my father's standing right next to me. And he says to me, John, what's that noise? I said, Dad, all the moving boxes in the garage, they slide around. It's a very distinct sound of a, you know, a box that might be 40, 50 pounds sitting in the garage on cement floor. You know that sound.
Yeah.
And that was exactly what it was. And I was hearing it all week. I'd sit down to watch TV. I would hear the boxes in the garage sliding around the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And my father heard it. My mother heard it. My wife heard it. Everybody in the room heard it. You know, I have no idea what that was. I mean, I didn't go in the garage and draw chalk lines around the boxes or anything like that.
It's a shame you didn't, because it might have been very revealing.
Yeah, to see if it was moved or anything. But yeah, I thought about that afterwards. But, you know, again, I know what I heard, and everybody heard it. Those boxes were sliding around the garage floor. So now, about 2 years later, my wife and I separate, so I move out. And this is a story my son told me years later when I started telling him about this and some of the different things that had happened. And he says to me, Dad, I got to tell you. I mean, he says, I would lay down in bed at night. We had a split-level house, like five levels, you know. Mm-hmm. He had the highest level, which was a creepy, creepy, dark room. And he said, Dad, I would lay down at night, and he said, in the wall, there was a voice that said, I'm going to get you. He said, it was a kid, probably about my age, he said. I'd hear it, I'd lay down, there'd be a voice in the wall behind me. And he said it would scare the crap out of him. Then he said one morning he was brushing his teeth, and my, you know, they had cats. I hated cats, but, you know, that's not why I got divorced. But, you know, they had a cat, and the cat was on the bathroom counter. My son said he's brushing his teeth, and all of a sudden he sees this, like, 3-foot-tall creature or whatever it is with a lot of hair on it kind of run down the hallway right past the door. He says, Dad, the cat turns and looks at it. The cat actually turned to look at it. My son saw it in the mirror. He said it scared the crap out of him. He said he jumped over the banister and landed in the living room. He was so afraid of what he saw. And there was something about that house, I don't know, the layout, it was a scary type house. Even uh-huh. The backyard, all thin, skinny trees. I don't think there was a tree back there that was more than 12 inches, you know, width. And in the winter, they would just kind of rock back and forth, you know, with no leaves on them. It reminded me of The Shining. I used to tell people, you look at the backyard, it reminds me of The Shining. This is the creepiest place I've ever lived. So I get divorced in 1994. And, you know, it's a funny thing, Kevin, I moved back. She gave me the house back. She didn't want it. She said she couldn't stay in that house. So she gave it back to me. So I said, what am I going to do with a 5-bedroom house, you know? So I moved back in the house. I'm telling you, Kevin, I would not sleep upstairs in the master bedroom by myself. I was just deathly afraid of being upstairs in that house. There was the 5th bedroom was actually on the 1st floor. I made that my bedroom. And I would sleep downstairs on the 1st floor. And I got a dog. I started getting dogs at that time. I used to have a dog as a kid. But I got a Doberman. And ever since then, I've had Doberman Pinschers. I have had five, and I have one here with me also. But in 95, I meet this woman, and Caroline, and she moves in with me, right? So I start telling her about some of this stuff that's happened, and she says to me, John, I got to tell you. She goes, ever since I've been here, I hear a baby crying upstairs in the green bedroom, and I hear a rocking chair going back and forth and a baby crying. And she says, I never said anything until you brought this up, but she says, that's what I hear upstairs. And then the weirdest thing happened. I wake up one night, and I look, and there's a kid standing at the foot of the bed. And I thought it was my son, who's about the same age, maybe he was about 10, 11 years old right then. And I see this kid standing there. He's got blonde hair, but he's wearing a plaid shirt and blue overalls. And his haircut is like you put a bowl on it, you know. But he looked kind of like my son, blonde hair. So I said, Nolan, come on over, lay in bed. So he gets in bed with me. I put my arm around him. I fall asleep. I get up in the morning, and I said to Caroline, where are kids? And she goes, kids didn't sleep over last night. Then I start thinking, this kid was a spirit from Oklahoma. He looked like a homesteader, and I bet where that house was, the kid died. And I think that's why those boxes were moving around. I think he came with us, you know, on the move, you know, and that's when I started to put things together. And that's what I, you know, in my mind, that's what I thought happened. But now it gets even creepier. Caroline and I were in bed, and, you know, she would always put like cream on her legs, and we were talking, and she had the one nightlight on by her bed, her side of the bed, right? So all of a sudden, she looks up and she says, what's that? There is this dark, swirling cloud moving across the ceiling. I looked at her, we looked at each other and said, how's that possible? There's one nightlight on, there's no way, nothing is making a shadow, and this thing is moving right across the white ceiling, and it settles right above me. It was probably 5-6 feet wide, and kind of a, like smoke, and it was swirling, and it was right above my bed. And I'm telling you, it creeped me out. We looked at each other, and we looked back, it was gone. But that's not the only time that it happened. Then I have my sister over, you know, they come out from Long Island to visit us. We're in Northern Jersey. And
now this house is located where, in New Jersey or Boston?
Yeah, Northern Jersey, right off of Route 80 in Roxbury, New Jersey.
Okay.
Closer probably towards the Poconos, let's say, than towards Newark or whatever. It's out that way in northern New Jersey. So then my sister's over with her husband and kids, and I was upstairs at the time. She's calling me, John, you got to come down here. Come down here right now. I come down. I said, what happened? She goes, did you see it? I said, no, I didn't see anything. She goes, and her husband's there, my son is there, my sister's there, and they start telling me about this dark cloud that was moving across the ceiling. All three of them saw it. They said it came from upstairs where I was, down the hallway, and across the living room ceiling. Scared the crap out of them. They said the dog, my son had a collie that he brought over, the dog was hiding in the corner when this happened. He went off and he just kind of hid in the corner. And, you know, so that was twice that we had this dark cloud. And then my son said to me, Dad, you know, a couple of years later, because they stayed in Jersey, I moved here to Pittsburgh. He tells me him and his friends drove by to look at the house because they were in the same neighborhood. And he says, Dad, we pull up in front of the house. It's all lit up, like almost every light is on in the house. He goes, then it went dark. Every single light only in that house went off, not the neighbors or anybody else. He said they were in the car. They just sped off. He said he's never gone back to that house. So
do you think the house is haunted, or do you think you are?
Well, I don't know, but I tell you what. I think that this came from Oklahoma is what I thought. I think that that house, that was, Kevin, that was the creepiest house you ever want to see. There was something dark and eerie and cold about that house,
uh-huh.
You know? So then what happens is, you know, I'm living in Pittsburgh, so I move over to Pittsburgh, and I'm here a couple of years. And like I said, I had joined, you know, I started researching UFOs, and I joined MUFON, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go to my first UFO conference. I've never gone to a UFO conference, and they had it in Northern Virginia, right by Washington, D.C. It was July of 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm 42 years old. So I'm 42 years old. So I go to my conference, and, you know, it was kind of weird. You know, I go to the conference, and, of course, I'm single. There's this woman comes into the conference.
That's a good place for us to hold up because we have a break coming. So we'll hold up right there on the edge of our chairs waiting to hear about the woman who came to the conference. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is the Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening, the John Ventry. He's a longtime UFO investigator, and he also is the founder, coordinator, sponsor, producer of some UFO conferences. The organizer, I guess, is a good word for that. And we'll get him to tell us about a UFO conference coming up. But first, I want to hear this story. Because as we went to break, you were telling us about you went to your first UFO conference, and a woman walked in, and then we went to break.
Yeah. Well, this is where the high strangeness of my life occurs. Okay? So right. I go to my first conference in Northern Virginia. It's July 4th weekend, 1999. And I notice, of course, I'm single now, right? So I notice this woman comes in, blonde, attractive, something very different looking about her. So we break for lunch, and of course I make sure I'm standing behind her in line so I can start conversation. And I buy her lunch, and we're sitting and talking. And, you know, it's like I keep looking at her. And she says to me, "I see that you're staring at me." And I said, "Yeah, I mean, your eyes just look a little different." And she goes, "Well, I'm part albino." And I said, "Okay." So we have this conversation, and you know, I don't think anything of it. We go back to the conference. So there was just something very different about her. And then I don't see her at the conference anymore. And I'll tell you something. I'll jump ahead just until to last year at my conference in Philly. I was telling this story to Connie Willis, who's a blogger. She's a host on QVC. She does a lot of this paranormal stuff. And she goes, "Come here, I want you to meet my friend, a guy that lives in upstate New York. He had the same exact eyes, you know, and it kind of bloodshot, blonde, a lot like that woman. And he says to me, 'I'm a hybrid.' He goes, 'I am convinced that I'm part extraterrestrial.'" So we were talking about this. But at the time, back in 1999, all I knew was that this woman was a little different looking. So it's no big deal. I go to my first conference. I meet all the people that I was reading about in the MUFON Journal and all of that. And I have a good time. And I drive home. It's 4th of July week. 4th of July, I actually left. I didn't stay for the fireworks show. I wanted to get home and see my girlfriend. So now the strangeness starts. Probably every night for 4 or 5 nights, I'm waking up about every hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. I am absolutely paranoid that there's something in the room with me. This has never happened before. Every time I turn the light out, I feel like there's something standing in the room with me. And I'll fall asleep, and all of a sudden I'll wake up. Kevin, I woke up one time, a couple of times, swinging my fist at the air. I actually hit the headboard. I thought I broke my wrist. I probably got bone chips or something. I hit it so hard, I can't sleep. And this goes on for about 4 nights in a row, because I think it was Monday I got back, 4th of July, and it was the rest of the week I was at work. And, you know, I was going to work. People were saying to me, "John, you look so tired." I said, "I can't sleep." I said, "Every time I go to sleep, I'm waking up." And you know what it feels like when somebody else is in the room with you, you know? Mm-hmm. You know when your wife is sleeping next to you or when you're sleeping alone, you know that there's somebody else in that room with you. So this goes on for a week. I drive out to Jersey, get my kids, bring them out for a week's vacation. Never happens again. So it stops. But I had some other things happen. I have my second out-of-body experience during that same time when I got home from 4th of July from the UFO conference. So now I have that, like I said, when I was living in Queens, I had that out-of-body experience floating above the trees. It's exactly 30 years later. This is the summer of 99. The first time it happened was the summer of 69. So it's exactly 30 years later. I could see, Kevin, I could see the peak of this house that I'm in right now. I actually wanted to reach out and touch the peak. I was as close to it as I am to this kitchen counter. And my green Grand Cherokee was sitting in the driveway, and I had left it out. You know, it's outside in the driveway. And that happened. So, again, you know, I'm not that experienced at that point, and I think, well, I had an out-of-body experience. My soul left my body, and, you know, that was pretty cool. So, you know, but I didn't put two and two together, right? So, it's actually my girlfriend at that time, Nancy, who goes on the UFO websites and starts looking. And she calls me and says, "John, there was a UFO sighting the night that you got home. There was a UFO sighting in State College, where Penn State is. And then a couple hours later, there was a UFO sighting in Morgantown, West Virginia." She goes, if you draw a line from those 2 points, your house is right on that line. I said, wow. I mean, wow. Mm-hmm. So there was a UFO scene, and it was on that same path right over my house. And but while I was at the conference, I bought Communion, you know, Whitley Strieber's book. And so it's probably a couple of weeks later now that I'm reading it. And there's a passage in that book, and this is where things start to click, where he mentions that people have out-of-body experiences and they think that this is their soul leaving their body. But he says it's not. It's an abduction. It's almost like waking up from anesthesia, where you kind of like open your eyes and you can see stuff floating above trees. And exactly what happened to me, you know, he says it was an alien abduction. I tell you, you know, I had one of those epiphanies where I just like dropped the book. You know, I was laying in bed reading and sat up and just stared at the wall and said, holy shit. Holy Moses, you know. And that's where things start to
all right, sense. So then is it possible, if this is a UFO abductee kind of situation, is it possible that some of the other stuff that you saw when you thought you were out of body or when you thought you were having dreams were also as a result of abductions?
I wonder now. You know, that's where I'm getting at, you know, with this. I never really looked into it because I was working and had a really good high-level job, and you know, and I didn't write this stuff until I sat down last year after retiring and said, let me document all of this and put it in chronological order. But you know, another thing happens. I blow my nose. I just blew my nose one day around the same time. A little piece of metal came out, kind of looked like a corner of a blade came out of my nose. And I looked at it and said, what the hell?
A quarter of a blade. What do you mean?
Like a piece of metal, like a scalpel, corner of a knife.
A corner.
Corner.
And so it was basically triangular?
Yeah, it was triangular. And it kind of looked like it was like the tip of a knife that blew out of my nose. And I look at it and said, what's that? So now I do one of my UFO conferences, you know, a couple of years later, here, and I got Dr. David Jacobs, and I picked him up at the airport, and I said, good, I got him in my car for about an hour. I'm going to grill him on this thing and tell him what happened, because I'm thinking this is an abduction now. So I tell him the story that I just told you, and, you know, he says to me, you wear underwear when you go to bed. And he says, what type of underwear do you wear when you go to bed? And I said, well, David, I don't wear underwear, you know. And he goes, oh, I said, why would you ask me that? And he goes, because in abductions, people who wear briefs, sometimes they wake up and they're backwards. They're put back on and they're reversed. He says, boxers, maybe you can make that mistake with. Briefs, you don't make that mistake with. And he says in his, you know, regressive hypnosis, that was something that told him that something went on. You wake up and your underwear is backwards, you know.
I got asked one time by the TSA whether I was wearing boxers or briefs. Can you imagine?
I can't imagine why they want to know that.
I said, you just took an x-ray. You took 2 full-body x-rays. What did you see?
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, I had no idea that was a factor in UFO investigations.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't know what he was talking about. What do you do? What type of underwear do you wear when you go to bed? I said, what, are you kidding me? Like I said, I don't sleep with underwear. So he said, that's why he asked me that. And I said, well, David, this happened exactly 30 years apart, 1969, 1999. And his opinion was that they don't go 30 years apart. His people he's interviewed, it's lifelong and it's more frequent. And I'm saying to myself, why couldn't they have tagged me like a cattle, you know, and they come every 30 years just to check on whatever they're checking on, you know? But I know one thing, in 2029, it's 30 years again. I'm setting up cameras in my room, motion activated. I'll be 72 at the time, but I'm going to find out what that was if it happens again. And I do believe that that's going to happen again, because it's 30 years apart, you know? And I didn't even realize it until I went back to this. That book I wrote, the sci-fi book called Apophis 2029. Mm-hmm. So, and that would be the anniversary of this also. But that's nothing. That's just a coincidence.
Well, let me ask you something. Have you noticed after that experience with the UFO passing over your home, and then you had the out-of-body experience, which the book that you were reading, Whitley Strieber's book, identifies as an abduction experience. After that happened, did you notice any of your senses being sharpened or any other abilities? Now, before you answer, we have a break. We'll get the answer on the other side of the break. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back right after this.
Some cards, you lost my money, you lost my car, had to foot your way back to LA, you only made it halfway. I said you're sorry, but I really don't. You think I'll come get you, but this time I won't. I still love you, but you treat me wrong, so I pick up.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. And my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. My best and most sincere prayers, hopes, dreams, and wishes that you never suffer that trauma again. My guest this evening is one of America's best-known UFO investigators, John Ventry. And we're getting a peek behind the scenes this evening into some of the really high strangeness, weirdness, some paranormal things happening all along during his life. And as we went away for break, I was addressing the story that you had told us about the UFO that passed over your home, and then you had what you thought was an out-of-body experience, and later I identified it as being an abduction experience based on writings of Whitley Strieber. And I asked the question, after that experience, did you notice having any heightened abilities or different abilities or any heightened senses?
Yeah, Kevin, nothing like that. I did suffer a medical problem out of the blue, erectile dysfunction, for 3 years, right after this happened. And I'm not embarrassed to say it, for 3 years, I had ED, and I had to take Viagra. And it was like, and then as the memory of this thing faded and everything, boom, back, not a problem again for the last 12 years. So, you know, and I'm putting these all together, and it's like, why would that happen? I was a healthy male. I was dating an extremely attractive woman. We ended up breaking up, I think, and that was the reason. Didn't make any sense, you know. But there's more to this. There were two dreams. When I was waking up, swinging my arm at the air, and thinking something's in the room, there were two dreams that I was having at that time. And one was, I kept dreaming, and like I'm saying, this is a dream. I'm dreaming of, I see this large kind of hairy creature standing next to my bed. That's my dream. And I think that's what I'm swinging my hand at. And, you know, and at that time, I didn't know about my son having that experience of that same thing running down the hallway that he sees pass by the bathroom door. So that's one. But the second dream that I had was even creepier. And, I keep having this dream of this kid who's, you know, probably 7, 8 years old. He's got these bulging eyes. He's got kind of like a little bit of hair on his head, mostly bald. He had pointy ears and pointy elbows. I'm telling you, it looked like Popeye's forearms with that big elbow sticking out, the pointy elbow. And my dog is there. I got a 95-pound Doberman. And I'm standing there, and this kid keeps poking the dog in the ribs. And I keep saying, stop poking the dog. But I remember seeing the dog frozen. The dog was like stiff and frozen, not moving, you know. And this kid is poking the dog in the ribs. And, you know, at the time, I had just been new to MUFON and UFOs and all of that. But, you know, years later, I'm questioning, is this some sort of a hybrid son that I had? You know, and is this an abduction? And
how sure are you that this is a dream?
I know it as a dream. I remember it at that time as every time I closed my eyes and fell asleep, it was a dream. But I remember it as a dream, but I don't know if it was a memory. I'm wondering if this isn't a memory that I'm thinking is a dream. So then, you know,
let me tell you something really, really weird that happened right here. Okay, with two people that have been guests on this show. And the reason I'm telling you is it may fit your situation, and you may want to be alerted to this. I got a call one day from a guy that is as feet on the ground as you're going to find. And a family history that goes way back, I mean, all the way to the founding of this country and beyond, okay? This guy is as rock solid as you're going to get. He tells me about a really weird dream that he just had, just that morning. But as he's telling me in such detail, it couldn't possibly be a dream because there's way, way too much detail and it lasts for way too long. Okay? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think this is a dream. So he describes for me being taken somewhere off planet in this dream. And he describes the base, and he describes things in detail, and colors, and air conditions, atmospheric conditions, and who was there, and what were people doing, and what were they writing with, and everybody was writing with you know, on pads and trying to work some kind of problem out. And one person who always uses a yellow pad was writing with a white pad. I mean, just minute details. Okay? Now, I was later talking with someone else who's been a guest on this show who mentioned something that made me think of what that guy had just told me. It was later that same day. And I asked him, have you ever seen anything like this? And I started re-describing that base. He said, yes, as a matter of fact, I have. And he said, I have been there. And I've never told anybody. Now, I'll just conclude it by saying that the two of them have been there together. But this guy's thinking, the first one is thinking it's a dream. In fact, the second one said, I thought it was a dream for a long time. And then I decided, because of various factors, that it was not a dream. So it's possible that what you're thinking of as dreams and what you're remembering as a dream might not be.
That's what I'm thinking, Kevin. I mean, at the time, I thought these were dreams. And but, you know, they don't last a long period of time like you just described. They're more of faded and flashes of memory, like this thing with the kid. You know, it lasted 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds. The thing standing next to the bed, a couple of seconds. It's almost like as if you opened your eyes, saw it, and then you closed your eyes again. You know, but then as time went on, and I got a little better at this because I had just joined, you know, MUFON. I was a young investigator. You know, I come across some questions that you ask abductees. You know, there's 8 questions, and you know, Chris Augustine actually gave me this. He's a guy that he's in my book actually, and has spoken at my conferences. He's from Philly. But you know, question 1 is, did you have missing time? And my answer is no, or at least not that I know of, right? Have you ever seen a flash of light? Not at this time, but we're going to get to it. That happened a couple of years later. Do you have any memories of flying? Yes. Do you have any dreams of beings? Yes. Have you ever seen a UFO? No. Do you have any sort of social consciousness about the environment and that type of stuff that all of a sudden developed? My answer would be no. I mean, to a lesser extent. You know, I'm a normal human being. I don't pollute. I don't do things I shouldn't do. But there isn't all of a sudden social consciousness that I develop, you know? Do you feel like you've got some sort of mission or task to be completed? I've always felt that way. I've always felt that there's something important I'm supposed to do. And I you know, even at work, I was one of the youngest state security directors at 29 years old. And I never felt like did what I was supposed to do. You know, I was always successful. Everything I've done turns to gold. At least that's what my bosses used to tell me. But I still feel that there's something really important that I need to do. And then the last question would be, have you ever awoken at night startled? And the answer is yes. That's happened a couple of times. And in this 1999 case that I'm telling you, that all happened. So that 1999 to me is the pivotal thing that's happened. But that's not the end. There's more. Now we shoot ahead to 2004. The ED problems are gone. You know, I meet this really nice, attractive woman. She moves in with me. It's 2004. It's Thanksgiving. My kids come over. And they always come to me for Thanksgiving. It's funny the way it works. They would come to me for Thanksgiving. We watch the football games, make the turkey. But my ex always got them for Christmas because that's what was important to her, and I was fine with that, you know. But I, you know, I never got to really have my kids for Christmas. But here's what happens, Kevin. It's 2004, Thanksgiving Day. I go upstairs to my bedroom. I lay down, and I do this every day. I lay down on my stomach, you know, I just lay there for 10 minutes just to catch a breath, you know. I go to get up. I can't get up. I can't roll over. I'm trying to roll to my side. I'm stuck. I can't get up. Like something's holding me down. I didn't feel weight or pressure or anything like that. Kevin, I'm very athletic, even at this age. I can't roll over. I can't get up. I turn my head and I look. I'm telling you, Kevin, there's all of a sudden I'm able to turn over. There's this milky white cloud, and it's all like moving, the milky white cloud backing away from me really quick in the room, and it just disappears. And I mean, and I'm able to get up out of bed. And I said, holy cow, what the heck was that? So now we go to bed. It's like 12:30 in the morning. Colleen and I, we go to bed. She's got to get up for work the next day because she works retail, and it's a big day for them. She's got to go to work. And my kids are down the hall in their bedrooms, right? So now, and we closed the bedroom door. I remember closing the bedroom door. And then around 3 in the morning, I wake up. Something's outside my bedroom door, walking around. I figured the kids got up. They kind of like, you know, they kind of walked down the hall. I'm figuring, like, listening or seeing what we're doing in the bedroom. Who knows, you know, because they're young teenagers.
Now, how did you know somebody was out there? I mean, did you hear it?
Mm-hmm. I could hear the footsteps outside my door walking around, and I figured, well, one of the kids got up and just walked down the hallway, right? So shuffling their feet is what it felt like, you know? And so I didn't think anything of it. So I go to sleep. My girlfriend gets up in the morning, you know, takes her shower, leaves for work at about 8:30 in the morning. Then I get up because I got to make breakfast for the kids. I go into the bathroom to brush my teeth, and I look at the mirror, Kevin. There's two arm handprints on the mirror. This is a big mirror in the bathroom. I look at it and I say, what is that? The bedroom door was closed. Nobody was in this room but Colleen and I. And I'm looking at the mirror, Kevin, and there's two, like you put your elbows on the glass and your hands and pressed, and there's two from elbow to fingertip against the glass. The only thing is, the forearms, Kevin, are the two bones of your forearm. It's not solid. You can see it's two bones. The hands have six fingers on it. Kevin, I'm telling you the truth. I look at it, and then I measure it, and I measure my own hand from fingertip to elbow. It's 3 inches longer than my own hand, my elbow to fingertip. And I'm saying, that would make this, whatever made it, 7 feet tall, because I'm 6 feet tall. And if you add 3 inches, plus it's not my whole arm length, I'm figuring it's about a foot taller. And so I measure it. Then I try to put my own elbows and hands, and I can't do it because it starts at the top of the mirror and comes down. I can't do it unless I crawl onto the counter and do it. So I know that nobody else was in the room except my son and I. And I left it there till my girlfriend came home, and she had the idea. She takes her makeup with a little brush and dusts it with her makeup. Mm-hmm. So now I got a latent print on the mirror. Six fingers and the bones, two bones of the forearm on both. I take my camera and I take a picture of it. I still have that picture, Kevin, showing it on there. So I grab my kids. I grab my son because he was older. And, you know, and I show it to him. He goes, Dad, I says, I didn't do it. I said, nobody could have done it. I brushed my teeth at night. It wasn't there. Colleen got up. I got up after her, and it's there. You know, it doesn't make any sense. So I tell him, and I said, and Nolan, what were you doing up at 3 in the morning outside my door? Kevin, you got to see the look on his face. He goes, Dad, that wasn't me. He said, I thought the same thing. He said, I heard you outside my door at about 3 in the morning. He said, I thought you came down the hallway to check on me.
Was that in this house that you're in now?
Yeah, this is in the Pittsburgh house, the Pennsylvania house. Just, you know, strange. So now you go forward a couple of more years. It's 2007 now, and my father passes away. It's October 3rd of 2007, you know, so that wasn't a good day, obviously. So I go to bed, you know, I'm sad, I'm grieving, I cried, you know. Kevin, I lay down in bed, it's dark, and I just kind of laid there and I crossed my arms on my stomach, and all of a sudden there's a flash of light in the corner. And, you know, I was kind of looking right there, mm-hmm. but I only saw it in my left eye. I did not see it in both eyes. I distinctly remember only seeing the flash in my left eye. And it was a flash of light with a dark tunnel, a black, black tunnel with the most brilliant electricity pouring out of it. If you could look down on a fountain with water pouring off the sides, that's what it looked like. The most brilliant multicolored electricity pouring out of this thing. And it was only a flash that you saw for, you know, a second. So I'm laying there thinking, then all of a sudden, all the hairs on my forearm moved like somebody put their hand on my forearm, because I was laying in bed, so it was my right arm on the end of the bed, and I could feel like static electricity, all the hair move on my arm like I believe it was my father that came back and came over to the bed and put his hand on me, and all the hairs on my arm moved, and you know, and that's what I think that was.
Was it frightening to you?
No, not at all. I sat up in bed and I said, Dad, is that you? Because that's what I believed it was. I believe that was his time to come back and say goodbye to his family. And whatever dimension or how this thing works, it was a black tunnel with the most brilliant multicolored electricity just pouring out of it like a fountain. And then, like I said, I could feel a hand and all the hairs on my arm move. And I think that was him coming back, you know, and there was nothing scary about that. I was, you know, I was hoping there was a way to make contact. You know, I called his name, but that was the end of it. There was no other flash, no other movement, no nothing, you know?
Uh-huh.
So now, you know, we go ahead a couple more years. It's 2009. And, you know, and Kevin, everything I'm telling you is the absolute truth. You know, I've had a great career as a top executive. You know, I deal with congressmen, everything else with what I've done. And all this stuff I'm telling you is the absolute truth. And it's 2009. And I documented the times now. You know, it's 4:40 in the morning. I wake up in my bed. And the way my bed is situated, the master bedroom, I can look down the hallway, you know? So I wake up, I look down the hallway. It's pitch black out. And at the end of the hallway is the stairway to the attic. And in the summer, I leave it open, the door, so any heat will just go upstairs into the attic area, even though there's air conditioning on. You know, I see somebody standing there. I'm telling you, this is for like 2-3 minutes. I sit up in bed and I'm looking. There is a man standing there at the end of the hallway, tall, probably over 6 feet tall, almost the whole length size of the doorway, very, very skinny, long arms, like a square head, very thin waist, and the attic light is on, so I can see him. You know, it's like for upstairs, the light is on, I could see him standing in the doorway. And Kevin, this wasn't like it was there and gone. I'm staring at it for 2-3 minutes saying, what the hell is that at the end of this? I actually sit up in bed, crawl to the footboard so I can get a little closer, and looking and staring, there's a man standing there in the hallway. So then I roll over, I turn the light on my, you know, next to my bed, and there's nothing there. So I walk down the hallway. There's no attic light on because it's pitch black at the end of the hallway. Upstairs, it's pitch black. I get back into bed, and so now I can't sleep. I'm looking down the hallway. All of a sudden, there's a light shining. Now, I've seen the paper person come and deliver, and you know it's a car because they drop the paper, and they make their turn in the cul-de-sac where I live, and the lights kind of like roll across the room, and they turn around, and they leave. I know what a car looks like passing by. This is a light that just gets dimmer and pulls away. There's no turning, no nothing. A light shines on the house, let's say, or through my windows, and it just pulls away like it's getting further away and gets dimmer. So, you know, that's 2009.
What do you think that was?
You know, Kevin, there was somebody standing at the end of the hallway. I know what I saw. It was not a dream. I was fully 100% awake. I can't imagine that even if you were dreaming this, that you opened your eyes and can still see a dream. And it lasted for a couple of minutes. I, like I said, I crawled to the foot of the bed, to look down the hallway, because this thing, I rubbed my eyes, I opened, shut, closed my eyes, rubbed my eyes. There's a man standing at the end of the hallway with a light coming down from the attic area that silhouetted him, and I could see him standing there.
Could you tell how he was dressed?
You know, all I could see, well, it reminded me of that movie District 9. Remember the creatures in there that had an extremely thin waist but long, lanky arms and legs? It struck me how long the arms were and how thin the waist was, like an 18-inch waist, standing 6'4", 6'6", with really long arms, but a square head like wearing a helmet. And it was silhouetted because the light was behind him coming down the stairs. And that's what I saw. And I know I was awake. I was awake at that time. So that's pretty much all of the high strangeness with me. But the weirdest of weird happens to my daughter now the following year.
Okay.
So now, and this is the last thing that's happened in my house. I've always been on the board of juvenile diabetes. Six-year term, and for the last 15 years, I've gone to their big gala in Pittsburgh where we celebrate the year and all the, you know, what we've done. So for the first time, I invite my kids, and, you know, it's $375 a ticket. So myself, my girlfriend, I'm trying to think. No, I didn't have a girlfriend at that time. It was myself, my daughter, my son, and his fiance. So the four of us go to the gala, have a great time, and just as a side note, you know, I'm not a drinker. I have two drinks, right? I have a third drink, and I am drunk. I can't even walk straight, and the kids are laughing at me, man, laughing as they should. You know, they're like 20 years old here. They drank six drinks, didn't bother them, so I'm not a drinker, you know? So it's not, we go home. That's just a side note, you know? So we go home, and we go to bed, and, you know, it's probably, you know, we go to bed, it's around midnight, maybe a little later that we got back, and, you know, we had tuxedos on, all of that, and we get changed, so... I'm sound asleep. 4 a.m, my daughter bursts into my room. I had closed my bedroom door. All of a sudden, the door flies open. My daughter comes running in. I'm trying to think how old she'd be here. 23 years old. 23. My son was 25. So she bursts into my room saying, and frantic, Dad, you got to listen to what happened. I know you're not going to believe me. Dad, you got to listen to me. This happened. I know nobody's going to believe me. I said, what? What happened?
All right, hold that. We'll be on the edge of our seats, but we do have to step away for a break. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening we're talking to John Ventry, and he's one of the best known UFO investigators around America. He's on a lot of radio shows and speaks at conferences, hosts conferences, organizes conferences for UFOs. And so everybody pretty much knows him, right? Well, we're getting a peek behind the curtain tonight. And what an interesting peek that is. All right, we're going to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This evening we're talking with one of the better known UFO investigators around the country, here in the United States of America. His name is John Ventry. And John has been a very successful business executive, retired now, been a UFO investigator for, about 16, 17 years. We're getting a little bit of a peek behind the curtain here tonight. We're getting to sort of hear some of the stuff that's gone on, the weird stuff, the strange stuff that's gone on, that most people don't get to hear. In fact, a lot of this he's never told on radio before. So we're getting it for the first time. John, as we went away for break, you were telling us about having gone to this gala event with your children and your daughter-in-law, and you guys came back home and got out of all your formal wear and went to bed, and you're in your room, you got the door shut, and about 4 o'clock in the morning, your 23-year-old daughter bursts through the door and says, "Dad, you gotta hear what I just saw," or something like that. So let's pick up there and tell us, what was it?
Yeah, so I calm her down and I say, "Tell me, you know, what happened?" So she says, "Dad," she says, I can't sleep, you know, after being at the gala, maybe because they were drinking, dancing, I have no idea. But she says, "I can't sleep." She says, so I'm pacing around upstairs, and she says, the whole time, she says, "I feel like there's somebody else with me, like somebody's following me around the room." And she goes, "So I'm thirsty." She says, I go downstairs to get a bottle of water, she says, "and there's none in the kitchen where I am right now." And she goes, "So I have to go down the basement." So, you know, and the basement's, you know, obviously dark. And it's funny, my house is themed, Kevin. Every room's a different theme. I have an Egyptian room, a Japanese room, a sports room. But my basement is all sci-fi, Bigfoot, UFOs. It's a creepy thing, you know. But that's where I keep it. All my sci-fi stuff is downstairs, you know, little models, statues, stuff like that. So she goes downstairs. She goes, "Dad, I'm down there. I get a bottle of water." She goes, "I can feel something like standing right behind me. Everywhere I go in the house, I feel like there's somebody walking next to me, you know?" So she says, "It's the basement, and that's creepy to start with." She goes, "I ran up the 2 flights of stairs back into my room," and she says she turned her bedroom light on, and she laid down, and she goes, "This is probably about 3:30 in the morning now." And she says, "I no sooner lay down on the bed and the light's on, because I don't feel right." And she goes, "All of a sudden, I feel this intense pressure on my entire body." She goes, "I feel like somebody just laid on top of me." And she goes, "It hurts. I'm paralyzed. I can't speak. It's painful." She says, "There's pressure." She says she can't turn her head. She says her head actually feels like it's going to explode. She says she has trouble breathing, like this weight on her chest. Her ears are ringing. And then she hears in her head all these voices, like a crowded room of people talking. And she says the weird thing is that this happens, and then she hears a voice say, "When you're done with her, I want to try out the other two." And Kevin, this is why I know she didn't make this up. Nobody would word it that way. It's almost like, you know, "You want to drive my Jaguar, I'll drive your Mercedes," you know? It's like she says, "When you're done with her, I want to try out the other two." And that means they're referring to my son and his fiance in their bedroom. So she says, "Dad, that happens." She says, then it kind of pulls out of her body. She's laying there like petrified, says, "What was that?" And it happens again. She says right afterwards, she's wide awake. It's not one of those where you're waking up from a dream like the dream I had as a 16-year-old. You know, she says she's wide awake. It happens again. She can't speak. She can't breathe. She can't move. And she says, you know, she feels like she's being held down. This time the voices in her head are very low, like it's a crowded room. She feels like she's suffocating. She says she looks up. There's this dark shadow, like the ones I saw in New Jersey in the house above her bed, kind of circling and swirling around like a whirlpool. And she says she's able to move her eyes and look at the mirror on the dresser. She sees the shape of a man standing in the doorway, like a shadow, a dark shadow of a man silhouetted there, standing in the doorway. So she's petrified. She says, you know, almost like me, that time where she's trying to move a hand or an arm, and it pulls out of her. And she says she's laying there, but there's this guy standing in the doorway. So she's like afraid. She says, "Dad, all of a sudden I just threw the sheets off of me, the blanket, and I bolted down the hallway to your room." And that's when she burst into my room. So she tells me the story. So I said, "All right, let's go down the hallway and wake your brother up." So we go over, knock on his door. My son and his girlfriend wake up, and we start telling him what just happened to her. And I'm telling you, Kevin, you got to see the look on my future daughter-in-law's face. All of a sudden, she turns like white, clammy, sweaty, almost like rocking back and forth. She gets sick. She says she feels nauseous and very hot. She gets pale and lightheaded. And my son says he don't feel right. I'm telling you, Kevin, it's about 4:30 in the morning. They got up. They packed their bags and they said, "We're leaving. We can't stay here." And they got in their car and they left. And my son told me later, he said, "Dad, we got in the car and we were getting ready to leave." He said, "We both burst out crying. We didn't know what it was. We felt such sadness had just overcome us." And he said, and they left at that point, and they drove home. And my daughter ended up sleeping, you know, in my bed, and she was scared as scared can be. And that was it. I mean, that was, you know, it happened to her. It didn't happen to me. But again, it was in this house. So, like I said, Kevin, I've never told this to anybody because I had a really good executive position. Matter of fact, nobody knew I even did UFO investigations until I appeared on the Discovery Channel 4 years ago in those TV shows. And all of a sudden I'm getting calls from corporate. "Was that you on TV? How long you been doing that?" And I said, "Well, 15, 16 years, but, you know, when I retired, I had time to sit down and write this in chronological order, and I've never discussed this with anybody, you know, and I told you every fact that's truthful, including suffering ED for 3 years, which I've never told anyone, not another human being have I told that to, and it disappeared, and it's never happened again. But these are strange things that have happened, and... You know, and I say to myself, you were not a UFO person. Every ufologist I've talked to loved it since they were 10, 12 years old, read their first UFO book and got into it. I didn't get into it till almost 40 years old. And a lot of times I say to myself, why are you doing this? You know, you lose credibility. You had this big executive position. You deal with congressmen. And now when you tell people about this stuff, you could see them roll their eyes and kind of giggle behind your back. But you feel compelled to continue doing this. And, you know, I think there's something else that happened, like I just related to you, and that's why I'm in this. And I think there's a reason why I have to be in this.
What is it?
That I think there's something going to happen, whether it's disclosure, whether they show up. I don't know. I just feel like I'm going to be in the middle of something that has to do with UFOs.
I'm going to open the telephone line and invite our audience to participate in tonight's show, in this conversation. You and I will continue talking as well. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number from anywhere in the world, but we know it can be expensive if you're having to make an international call. So if you're outside the USA, outside of Canada, we have an additional option for you on the website. It's called a flash message. Just go over there to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show. Click the link right above that picture that says flash message, okay? But that's if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi, Mr. Ventry.
Hi.
I purchased your book UFOs over Pennsylvania, and I want to thank you for your quick service on delivering the book to me, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm sure Kevin will give you time to mention the MUFON Expo that's coming. My question to you is, it seems like to me that you have both a mixture of like a ghost entities and ETs. You know, where you talk about the boy from Oklahoma, I believe, or whatever, seems to be more of a ghost entity. But yet, when you got like the six fingerprints, the six fingers, everything I always hear is that these ETs have six fingers.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jerome, I give this a lot of thought, and I'm a real logical person. And, you know, if you've ever seen my presentations, I present them very logically, like I'm doing a presentation at work. And, you know, you watch these TV shows with Michio Kaku, and, you know, they talk about the universe, and, you know, they have a string theory of physics, let's say. So I'm looking at, you know, I've had all this paranormal stuff happen to me. I've never seen a UFO. Although I've had these other things that lead me to believe there may have been an abduction. So I say to myself, you got to reconcile the paranormal and UFOs. I mean, some UFOs may be and are most probably interplanetary, and that's the way MUFON looks at it, nuts and bolts. They flew here from Alpha Centauri. It took 4.3 years, and they fly back, you know? And they don't delve into the paranormal. They don't want anything to do with ghosts and goblins and witches and demons. But I know that that stuff is real. I know that there's a spirit world. I know that there are entities. I know that ghosts and that type of stuff is real. So I look at it, and I believe the UFOs are real from my research and the different documents. So in my mind, I need a string theory that explains everything that I just explained to you that's happened to me and that I believe. And, you know, in my mind, it's all interdimensional. Interdimensional would be my string theory of the unexplained, that, you know, the UFOs are able to come through a dimension, that when you die, like when my father passed away, he was in another dimension, and I saw that flash, and I believe that was him coming back to say goodbye. These freaking clouds that of dark clouds on the ceiling that I've seen, my daughter has seen, my sister and her husband saw it. That's all interdimensional stuff. So, you know, my answer is I think most of this is interdimensional. You know, is there life in space? Absolutely. I think there are more habitable planets out there than there are dollars in our deficit, 17 trillion. I think life's abundant in space. Some of them can get here flying somehow, with some other form of propulsion that we don't know about. But I think this whole thing of what we're seeing, ghosts, demons, UFOs, I think part of it is interdimensional, and that's my answer.
Well, I believe that there's an abundance of life out there also, and I'm going to end so other callers can call in. And I just want to thank you for opening up with your experiences, and thank you, Kevin, for taking my call.
All right. Thank you for the call.
And show up at either Erie, Pittsburgh, or Philly. We put on some great conferences, and introduce yourself.
Yeah, and the telephone line is open. The flash message line is open. And in just a moment, I'm going to ask John to tell us about these conferences. Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent. Can you hang on through the break?
Yep, I'll do it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back right after this break.
All right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is John Ventry. On the telephone with me is Brent from Wyoming, and we are on final approach. That means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. Brent, we had to cut you off right after you told us who you were, so the floor is yours.
Okay, John, I'm going to ask you a question about hypnosis. You've heard of stage hypnosis, hypnotherapy, and going back to recover lost memories. How about investigative hypnosis, as in going back and using your sensitivity under hypnosis to investigate those energies to find out what they are? For example, the dark energies, the dark shadows. Is there any possibility you've thought of using hypnosis and your built-in sensitivity in that state of mind to find out what those shadows are?
You know, I attempted to. I contacted a local hypnotherapist here, because again, this happened years ago when I was new to ufology and all of that, and I felt the same way. Maybe I could do regressive hypnosis, do something. And you know, I spoke to the hypnotherapist, and they kind of talked me out of it. You know, they said, well, it's not quite what you think. It's not a truth serum that you're going to be able to tell me every detail. You have to do a lot of sessions, and you can interject your own thoughts into this stuff. You know, it's really like, you know, making your mind blank and what comes to your mind at first. And he really talked me out of it, which was disappointing. Maybe I needed to find a better person in the field. So that's why when I had Dr. David Jacobs come to my Pittsburgh conference and I got him in the car for an hour, I was like telling him, wait, I'm thinking he's going to say, you know what, let's do a regressive hypnosis session or recommend somebody in this area. So I never got around to that. But the more I've pieced it all together and, you know, maybe I can find a better person to do the regressive hypnosis, I think that there's something there.
The one person you might think about who has a reputation for it is Jim Mars.
Jim Mars. Is he out in California?
I don't know. Kevin, you know where he is?
Are we talking about the journalist?
He's the guy who says, I'm trying to think, he says, turn it around he's the one who does I think you're right, he's a journalist.
The journalist? I had no idea he was into hypnosis. In Texas.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe,
are you
maybe,
talking
maybe
about
a different one, but he,
are you talking about Daryl Sims?
That's the one.
Okay. Daryl Sims is a licensed hypnotherapist. Also licensed hypnoanesthesiologist, and he's the one they call the alien hunter.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, he's in Texas. He's in Houston, Texas, I believe.
Okay. You know, it's funny that there really isn't anybody here in Western PA. I have a guy who's a psychologist that's part of my group. He's a MUFON member, but he's helped me on a few investigations and actually, you know, sat down and done sessions of just talking to someone who thought something happened. And I asked him about the regressive hypnosis. He says, John, I haven't done it in 30 years. He said I'd have to get myself back up to snuff on that because I'm still searching here in the Pittsburgh area for someone credible. So one day I'll go down that path when I can find somebody, you know. But I don't think they're in Western PA, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Daryl's in Houston, and he's a very interesting guy. I don't know. Do you know him, John?
No, I know it's the name of somebody I'd like to get to speak at my conferences, Jim Mars and Daryl Sims. There's a whole list of people that, you know, eventually I'll get them up here to one of my three conferences.
All right. Anything else, Brent?
No, that was it.
All right. Thanks for the call. Tell us quickly about the upcoming conferences, John.
Yeah, well, we've added an Erie conference this year, Erie, Pennsylvania, which is, it's either the third or fourth largest city in the state of Pennsylvania, but there's about 1 million people up there. And in 2 weeks, May 4th, Saturday, May 4th, we're doing our first conference. Beautiful setting at the Bayfront Convention Center. We have keynote speaker Stanton Friedman. We have Karen Dolan, Stan Gordon, Reverend Swoop, and myself. So we have five speakers, and, you know, it's only $25. I don't gouge people on price. I just try to break even or make a small profit on it so we can do it again. But that's coming up in 2 weeks on May 4th. And again, you see, Kevin, you seem to be a first on everything. I've never told anybody these paranormal things, and you're the first one to find out that our Philadelphia conference, which will be our sixth conference in Philadelphia, October 4th through the 6th, is a UFO hunter reunion. We got Bill Burns, Pat Uskett, and Dr. Ted Ackworth for a UFO hunter reunion. Bill mm-hmm. Burns is writing UFO Hunters Season 1, so he'll have those books there for sale and to be autographed by the three of them. And it's an absolutely great lineup. Besides the three UFO hunters, there's Travis Walton, Tom Carey, Richard Lang, John Maberry, Nick Redfern, Anthony Sanchez, myself, Mike Melton, Bill Weber from MUFON, and Antonio Paris. And you get all of that for about $40 a day, you know? So again, great price for 13 speakers. And then we finish up the year November 2nd in Pittsburgh. We have Kathy Martin, Linda Moulton Howe, Stan Gordon and myself, and Michael Lee Hill, speaking about Lake Erie UFOs. So all of that stuff is at MUFONPA.com, the three conferences. And if you're interested in my books, it's JohnVentry.com. And like the one caller brought up, the UFOs over PA, 560 pages, about 400 dedicated to Pennsylvania, about 160 pages to the UFO field in general. And I believe it's one of the best UFO books out there because I've put everything I know about this subject, which is extensive, into that book. I even got position statements from about 30 ufologists of what they believe, where it comes from, and there's a section on position statements. So great book, and if you like sci-fi, I got my Apophis 2029, asteroid hits the Earth, and there's a UFO ending to it. So, I like to write the sci-fi stuff and write everything the way I think it will be or could be.
Well, that's a great plot. We've got about, a minute and a half left here before I have to start bringing things in for a landing. Any chance that the novel, the fiction, is going to make its way into a movie?
Well, you know, I wish it would, Kevin. I think that this book, especially when you read the ending to it, is one of those wow factors that people would just say, unbelievable. You know, because you don't expect it, and especially the ending. It's a great storyline. I wish somebody or I could meet somebody that would read it and turn it into a manuscript. I think it has movie potential all over it.
I just did the title song for a feature film out in Hollywood. If that turns into a movie, I want to write your title song.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good.
All right, John, I want to thank you for opening up like this tonight. This is a whole new thing for you, but also for us. Normally, when we have a ufologist on, or an investigator, to be more precise, we talk about UFOs and the nuts and bolts of the investigations. But this has been very, very interesting to get a peek behind the curtain and see what's going on in the life of one of America's best-known UFO investigators.
Hey, let me give you another piece of first.
Okay, it has to be quick.
Yeah, I got information today. Mm-hmm. History Channel is going to do a MUFON-based TV show, and I'm in it. A weekly
cool.
series.
Congratulations. Congratulations. And again, thanks for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. John, stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, John Ventry, where else are you going to get stuff like this? Right here at the Kevin Smith Show. That's the place. And remember, we're listener supported. If you like what we do here, we need to be able to keep doing it. And in order for that to happen, we need you to stand with us financially. Click the donate button and help us out. We need it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.